ambassador to hear the chief of Columbia's Continental Staff, William L. Shirer. We take you now to Berlin.
Hello, America. Hello, CBS. This is Berlin. The sands are running fast.
And hello. This is America, where the sands are also running fast. Let's check in at the front lines of the fight to save democracy.
You said that if the Supreme Court said someone needed to be returned, that you would abide by that. You said that on Air Force One just a few days ago. And they said that it must be facilitated.
Why don't you just say, isn't it wonderful that we're keeping criminals out of our country? Why can't you just say that? Why do you go over and over? And that's why nobody watches you anymore.
Yep, this is America under Trump 2.0. And everybody is watching this hot mess. I'm Rachel Bitticoffer.
And I'm Aaron Murphy, and let's get this straight. Donald Trump rounds up the wrong guy, sends that wrong guy in chains to a supermax prison in El Salvador, then wonders why the rest of us have questions.
So listen, we're going to depart a bit on format for this episode because the events this week with the Kilmer Abrego Garcia situation have taken such a dark turn, and it serves as an important warning.
The president of El Salvador says he will not facilitate a return for a Maryland man who was mistakenly deported.
Well, here's a quick refresher. Federal agents disappeared Abrego Garcia back in March in what the Trump administration claims was a roundup of immigrant gang members. Remember, they used the Alien Enemies Act, a 200-year-old law that allows the president to disappear people on a hunch. And since they took a torch to due process, we have no way of knowing which of those men, or how many, if any, actually belonged to gangs, and which of them had the bad luck combo of speaking Spanish and having scary tattoos.
That said, we know Abrego Garcia was never supposed to be targeted. Why? Because the Trump administration admits his arrest was an administrative mistake. The case ended up in the Supreme Court, where all nine justices unanimously affirmed the president's power to deport under the Alien Enemies Act if due process is afforded to deportees that establishes they pose a national security threat. Of course, none of the deportees Trump sent to El Salvador received such due process. Yes, the Supreme Court ordered Trump to help bring Abrego Garcia home, but in a chilling omission, they offered no way to force the Trump administration to apply due process retroactively. So here's how Stephen Miller is spinning it, speaking during a meeting Monday between Trump and the president of El Salvador.
And what was the ruling in the Supreme Court, Steve? Was it 9-0?
Yes, it was a 9-0.
In our favor?
In our favor, against the district court ruling, saying that no district court has the power to compel the foreign policy function of the United States. As Pam said, the ruling solely stated that if this individual, at El Salvador's sole discretion, was sent back to our country, that we could deport him a second time. Well, no version of this legally ends up with him ever living here because he is a citizen of El Salvador. That is the president of El Salvador. Your questions about it, per the court, can only be directed to him.
Now, Trump says it's up to El Salvador to decide. He claims he's powerless. And to throw some gas on the fire, the president of El Salvador, Nayib Bukele, calls himself the world's coolest dictator, by the way, says releasing Abrego Garcia would be preposterous.
Do you plan to return him?
Well, I'm supposed to have suggested that I smuggle a terrorist into the United States, right? How can I return him to the United States? Like, I smuggle him into the United States, or what do I do? Of course, I'm not going to do it.
And Attorney General Pam Bondi says,
right now, additional paperwork had needed to be done. That's up to El Salvador if they want to return him. That's not up to us. The Supreme Court ruled, President, that if, as El Salvador wants to return him, this is international matters, foreign affairs, if they wanted to return him, we would facilitate it, meaning provide a plane.
God, what a shit show. This is America is a callback to the CBS radio broadcast from the 1930s called This is Berlin. Rachel, you are an expert in the rise of Nazism and fascist Germany, so let's draw some comparisons here.
Yeah, I decided it was finally time to spend some ink on how the Nazis built their alternative justice system and then used it to prosecute Jews, communists, social democrats, and later resistance groups like the White Rose to imprison and execute thousands of people. First, for some background, guys. The Gestapo was the secret state police. It was created shortly after Hitler came to power in 1933. But it really got going when Nazi sadist Heinrich Himmler, who was also the leader of the SS, took it over and turned it into an intelligence gathering unit. The Gestapo had extraordinary powers. There was no judicial oversight. They could arrest, detain, torture, and kill without any type of trial. They made up a thing called protective custody. So that became the code for sending people to concentration camps, basically. They relied on a massive network of informants, and that was really ordinary Germans ratting out their neighbors, okay? The Gestapo became essential for crushing internal dissent, enforcing the Nazis' racial laws, because they had laws where you couldn't date a Jew, for example. In fact, if a Jew was to violate that law, they'd be risking their lives. They identified and rounded up Jews. The bottom line is the Gestapo wasn't huge in numbers. It was huge in terror. It was built using existing police forces, then militarized by Himmler's SS. It was armed with unlimited power and sustained by fear, surveillance, and informants.
Yeah, that is disturbing as hell. As an expert on the Third Reich, can you tell us a little more about how it felt living under the Gestapo, if you can put yourself in those shoes?
I mean, first off, fear is the point, right? The Gestapo wanted ordinary people to think they were everywhere all at once, right? But in reality, it wasn't. They were stretched really thin, Aaron. They had to cover the entire, you know, German and Prussian landmass. So there was about 7,000 Gestapo agents for a population of 66 million. But the real power came from creating that culture of paranoia. The Nazis built an informant system, which, you know, really was their secret weapon, because most arrests didn't come from the Gestapo. It came from citizen snitches. And you know what? Informants, they included your coworkers, neighbors, friends, dude, even family members. About 80% of Gestapo cases started with someone voluntarily reporting suspicious behavior and what we call a denouncement. It was often petty, personal, driven by revenge, okay? Things like, oh, my secretary at work told an anti-Hitler joke, or my neighbors listening to foreign radio in their apartment, anything critical to the Nazi party, anything that helped Jews. The point is, this was private conversation, in the home conversation, that could get you denounced and then in the hands of the Gestapo.
You're showing me this website. It is an important resource called The Persecution and Murder of European Jews by Nazi Germany, 1933 to 1945. It compiles these letters, these denouncement letters on this website. And let's read just a couple of them, because it's pretty eye-opening and it's a really important thing to keep in mind as we process all of this news. Here's one. On March 12, 1940, Charlotte Wollermann from Dusseldorf denounced the Protestant pastor Gottfried Hutzel for having given a pro-Jewish sermon. Quote, Pastor Hutzel essentially said the following, "It is not the Jews who are the children of Satan, but those who are persecuting the Jews." On July 18, 1933, scientists at the Potsdam Observatory denounced their colleague, Professor Erwin Finlay Freundlich, as an anti-nationalist descendant of Jews, and said they have, quote, information that Mr. Freundlich made remarks about the Führer and the National Socialist Movement, which must deeply outrage every German. On November 21, 1941, Henricus van den Acker reports Hugo Kreuner to the German authorities for being a Jew and continuing to work in the civil service, quote, "I have heard it is forbidden for people of Jewish descent to work in the civil service, and now I recently heard about a case where such a person has received a permanent position in the civil service with increased pay applied retroactively from June onwards."
You can see now why the paranoia was so bad. I mean, the walls had ears, and any personal enemy or opponent that you make, I mean, they could denounce you. So people had huge incentives to denounce each other, especially neighbors who had Jews in their apartment building and, you know, had a better apartment. Brothers would denounce their own siblings to get control of the business or full inheritance rights. I mean, that's what happens when you have incentives to denounce. Not all people are angels. And when you put an incentive system, a reward system to denounce your friend, your neighbor, your husband, your wife, people are going to do it. And this is what happened to the denounced. You get the knock at the door. Usually it was like a 3 a.m. knock. Immediate arrest. They would take you down to Gestapo headquarters on Prince William Strasse number 8. And subject you to heinous torture techniques, brutal interrogations. Many people never made it out of there, okay? If you lost someone into the Gestapo headquarters, you assumed you would never see them again, because even if they weren't murdered, most of them were taken into what the Nazis called protective custody, okay? Protective custody, which really meant you have no rights, no due process, and we're sending you indefinitely to a concentration camp or a prison or a death camp with no release date. I mean, basically what those poor guys go into in El Salvador without, hopefully without the physical torture. We don't even know that, right? The Nazis were big fans of public executions. They brought back the guillotine. Posters would be up all over the city. Enemies of the people will be punished. Much of the terror came from not knowing, you know, who was watching or listening. I mean, imagine doing resistance under the threat of imminent death, right? The Gestapo didn't even have to watch everyone. They just needed everyone to believe that they were being watched, and it was highly effective.
Ugh, it's terrifying stuff. Well, let's talk about how the Nazis set up the courts so that they could convict people without due process, which is sounding really familiar here. Due process simply means fairness in legal proceedings and government actions. Essentially, it's about following fair procedures and respecting legal rights.
Correct. And the Nazis, they couldn't have done what they did under the regular judicial system. And in fact, and once it became clear that the normal judicial system could only be corrupted so far, they had convictions from the Reichstag fire get overturned by the German Supreme Court. So the Nazis created an exterior judicial system, dude. And they named it, I shit you not, the People's Court.
Well, the People's Court was created by the Nazis in 1934 to combat enemies of the state, and the People's Court became part of the Nazi system of terror, condemning tens of thousands of people as Volksvermin and thousands more to death for, quote, Volk treason. The trial and sentencing of those accused of complicity in the July plot and attempting to kill Adolf Hitler in 1944 was especially unjust.
Yeah, I mean, there's one story of one resistance group, the White Rose Resistance Group, and it really encapsulates how bad the People's Courts were, okay? The White Rose was a student-led nonviolent resistance group in Munich. It was led by students Sophie Scholl, Hans Scholl, which was her brother, and this other guy named Christoph Probst, okay? And all they did was leaflets. They distributed leaflets calling for resistance to Hitler, exposing Nazi crimes, and condemning the war. Their final leaflet said, quote, "We will not be silent. We are your bad conscience. The White Rose will not leave you in peace." On February 18th, 1943, Hans and Sophie were caught distributing leaflets at the University of Munich. They had been hunted down by the Gestapo. Sophie famously pushed a stack of leaflets over the balcony, letting them rain down into the atrium, a final act of defiance. They were immediately taken down to the Gestapo headquarters. The sham trial was February 22nd, 1943, in the People's Court in Munich. By the way, the judge, Roland Feigler, was a virulent Nazi, infamous for humiliating defendants, screaming in court, and delivering death sentences. No legal defense was allowed. Freisler shouted insults, mocked them, called them traitors, and found them all guilty of high treason, aiding the enemy, and undermining military morale. They handed out pamphlets, guys, okay? They were all sentenced to death by guillotine. Same day execution. Here were Sophie Scholl's famous last words before her execution. "Such a fine, sunny day, and I have to go. But what does my death matter if through us thousands of people are awakened and stirred into action?" The Nazi People's Court wasn't justice. It was a theater for terror. Sophie Scholl's trial shows it at its most brutal, fast, public, humiliating, and fatal, designed to crush resistance and scare the rest of Germany into silence.
Well, that's what makes what Trump is doing so disturbing. The audio is bad, but off the side of his news conference with President Bukele, a hot mic did pick up Donald Trump telling him, "Next, we're going to do the homegrowns," and warned President Bukele that he's going to need to build
five more places.
Yeah, that's fair. All right.
Five more prisons.
Yeah, like my friend Bill Kristol over at the Bulwark tweeted out, that entire presser gave me chills, and that was before the hot mic was even posted. By the way, Trump also said a version of it to the camera.
"I'd like to go a step further. I mean, I said it to Pam. I don't know what the laws are. We always have to obey the laws. But we also have homegrown criminals that push people into subways, that hit elderly ladies on the back of the head with a baseball bat when they're not looking, that are absolute monsters. I'd like to include them in the group of people to get them out of the country, but you'll have to be looking at the laws on that, Steve, okay?
And when asked directly about deporting American citizens to El Salvador, Trump had this to say.
You mentioned that you're open to deporting individuals that aren't foreign aliens but are criminals to El Salvador. Does that include potentially U.S. citizens, fully naturalized Americans?
If they're criminals and if they hit people with baseball bats over their head that happen to be 90 years old, and if they rape 87-year-old women in Coney Island, Brooklyn, yeah, that includes them. Why do you think there's special category of person?
Well, Aaron, I know this has been a sobering conversation, but losing due process is where it starts. I mean, we just walked through, you know, how the Nazis manipulated the current judicial system when they ran into the gears and the grinds of it. By that point, they had enough power just to create an auxiliary justice, I mean, quote unquote, justice system, right? Because without due process, you don't have justice. Due process is slow. And that, I think that's why, you know, in his argument is why are they resorting to these things? Well, everything's too slow. You can't deport people fast and give them due process, right? But, you know, the situation that this poor guy is in El Salvador shows, and their unwillingness to rectify it is really astounding.
Yeah, it's also somewhat of a Stephen Miller shell game, right? Well, it's not our problem because he's already there. It's up to El Salvador. And El Salvador, of course, says, nope, we can't send him back because you would just deport him again. All of this is designed by strategy to be confusing, to be irritating, and to completely undermine the rule of law. And one thing that sticks out to me, Rachel, is you said this a couple weeks ago, but remember that when the courts order the administration to do something, it's not like there's a police force to make sure that it happens.
Correct. There's no enforcement mechanism. And I know, one Anthony Scaramucci tweeted out that no one's ever defied the courts before. And that's actually not correct, but it has been a very fucking long time, Aaron.
Yeah.
Andrew Jackson, who is, of course, Trump's, like, it's so funny because Andrew Jackson was batshit fucking nuts, just like Donald Trump, okay? Literally insane, just didn't give a fuck about anything. And, you know, the difference, of course, being is like his presidency comes pretty early into the Republic. It's before the Civil War, so it's less than 100 years old. And, you know, it's a rustic, mostly agrarian society. You know, the states are still very isolated and they don't have technology, right? Trains are just coming, right? So, you know, I'm not sure that just because we survived it through Andrew Jackson is what my point is. I'm not sure that we can survive it in the modern era, not without a lot of people suffering. I mean, think about this dude. I think about this dude every day. He, as far as I understand it, in that El Salvadoran prison is a concentration camp. They have no contact to attorneys, right? I heard there's no windows.
Yeah, like, it's like a supermax prison. I mean, it really is.
Yeah, it's a supermax prison in a third world fucking country, right? And this, so I think this dude, honest to God, has no idea that anyone's even trying to get him out of this place. He's just been there in the darkest place you could possibly imagine yourself finding yourself in. And unlike here, where he would know, like, there is an effort. Like, even those Russian prisoners being held by Putin had that at least enough due process to talk to a fucking attorney, right? Like, this guy he's in a dark room, and they're telling us they're going to do citizens next. So they're going to inoculate the public to it using these, you know, what they call legal gang members. And, you know, Trump and these clips that we just played, of course, how is he framing it? Well, you know, we're going to deport the guy that beat the old lady in the head. Well, good. I fucking want his ass deported, but due process to take care of someone like that, right? Like, well, now, like, we're talking about really a situation where he's really leaving the law behind. They are arguing that the word facilitate means that they take a subsidiary role in releasing this guy, right? So, the idea that we're living in this, like, extrajudicial period, I think it's something that people should be much more concerned about than they are right now.
And as the old saying goes, if it can happen to somebody else, it can happen to you.
And that's really what this research is all about. And the research freaked people out, right? Because guess what they found? was like, it could happen any fucking where, right? And that's why I said Clara Lewis wrote that book, It Can Happen Here, right? It's people, right? So when people become psychologically in a position where they have dehumanized others, and by othering them, have made them not human, not, or at least not like fully human, it gives a permission structure to do terrible things to each other, right? Mm-hmm. And it's very clear that that's what MAGA has been building. I mean, this attack on Josh Shapiro, the governor of Pennsylvania, over the weekend, the governor's mansion gets firebombed on Passover, and the night of Passover, he's a Jewish man. You know, that's very clear how quickly this stuff is escalating. That's going to bring us to the end of this week's show, folks. An important history lesson. Thanks for sticking with us, and stick with me throughout the week. I'm on Twitter and Blue Sky at Rachel Bitticoffer.
And of course, there's more at The Cycle on Substack. That's thecycle.substack.com. Our book is Hit 'Em Where It Hurts, How to Save Democracy by Beating Republicans at Their Own Game. More at hitemwhereithurts.com. And Rachel, we stuck to one topic this week, but that doesn't mean it's all roses for Trump's tanking of the global economy.
That's worth a whole show of its own. Stay tuned and keep your stick on the ice, friends. For now, let's give the final word to Congressman Stephen Horsford of Nevada.
What are the details? How long is the pause? How many days?
Horsford lit up the U.S. Trade Representative, that's Jamison Greer, during a committee hearing last week in the House, moments after Trump caved and put a 90-day pause on most tariffs, but escalated the trade war with China. Apparently, the guy in charge of trade was kept in the dark.
Keep seeking the light, friends. Back next week.
WTF! Who's in charge?
The President of the United States is in charge.
And what do you know about those details?
Well, as I mentioned,
looks like your boss just pulled the rug out from under you and paused the tariffs, the taxes on the American people. There's no strategy. You just found out 3 seconds ago, sitting here, we saw you.